Okay, so we're beginning a quick class in Chinuch, being that, as far as we know, this isn't a series, this is a one-time thing. So we have to ask ourselves, what can you get out of a one-time class in Chinuch? And I think the answer is on a few levels. Number one, there are issues that the mere fact that you deal with them already makes a person grow in them. Meaning, part of the issue is that we get into habits and we don't stop to analyze what's going on. And I think that the role of a shir is firstly to make us stop and analyze. It's like a good musar shir. You won't necessarily need all the points that said in a musar shmuz, but the fact that a person stops and takes time for introspection and analyzing, is this right, is that right, he's already gained. If you go with the mahalach of the shir, you don't go with the mahalach of the shir, it doesn't matter. And this is a piece of advice that my wife and I received when Moshe Yehuda was still in utero. So Rav Slotin at the time, he was our shadchan. I asked him what book he recommends on chinuch. And he said he recommends A and B, but at the end of the day, what he recommends most is taking a book that will be a basis for conversation. He said, you won't find a book that you agree with every point he says, or that everything he says works for you. But what you will find is that if you take certain books, then you can read the book, and then start discussing what you do and don't agree with in the book. So that's number one. I don't expect you guys to agree with everything I say here, which is fine. So the first point of the shir is that you won't agree with every point that's here. I'm not looking for you to agree with every point. Different people have different ways in chinuch. Different families have different styles. Different children have different stages. There's no way that a shir in chinuch can really talk to each person specifically. But point number one is to get a person to think. Meaning the mere fact that at the end of the day a person analyzes, I find that my chinuch improves when I give chinuch shir. Why? Because it's one thing to know something in theory. It's another thing to actually think about it and talk about it. So the first thing is that we gain from the fact that we think and we talk. The second thing is that in chinuch, there are different tools and different stages and different personalities and different settings and different communities. And chanoch lanar al pi darko, so that involves a lot of factors. So I think that the second thing we're going to try to accomplish is to acquire tools. And then every parent has to analyze which tool to use when. There's no way that you can encompass every situation. And that's my disclaimer here, that I'm not saying use tool A or B or C in any given situation. That's up to the parent. Yeah, that's part of what you have to think about. But there will be certain perspectives and certain tools that a person might not have thought of earlier, which it's my hope that at the end of the night, a person walks away and thinks, okay, that gives me an angle of thought. The third point of what we will not do tonight is we won't have any magic solution for anything. Because I don't believe there are magic solutions. I think that chinuch is something that takes time. Chinuch requires patience, and children, you don't grow a child overnight, you don't develop chinuch overnight, and you usually don't destroy overnight. It takes something really radical to destroy overnight. So that's a point of encouragement, because we don't have to be so pressured. We also have a certain amount of time. If we're already talking about that, so there's another point. There's a big mechanech in the Haredi community called Rav Yaakovson, and he says that usually, parents succeed in chinuch when they're looking to succeed in chinuch. How so? A parent is interested in succeeding, so he goes to one series of lectures that teaches him one mahalach. And then he tries that mahalach with the kids. So they try one theory, and after a few weeks, a parent sees that this theory is not the cure-all, and then they go to another series. And they try that. They study that and learn that. And after a few weeks of trying that, that doesn't work. So what happens is parents go from theory to theory. And then the kid comes out balanced. The kid that has a problem is the kid whose parents write the theory. then the parents have to stick to the theory because they believe in the theory. And if you stick to one theory throughout a kid's growth, so then you're not going to succeed. So he says it jokingly, but there's truth to it. There's no one theory that's going to answer every problem. There's no one shear that's going to answer every issue. At the end of the day, we have to be flexible and match our chinuch to the child and try different things, because at different stages, different things are going to work. And that's part of the reason that there's no magic solution, because kids are dynamic. You're dealing with the whole person. So if I'm dealing with the whole person, I need to work with the different aspects of the person to move forward. Chazal gave us a pasuk that defines all chinuch. Chanoch lanar al pi darko. Based on the child's path. And that means that there can't be a formula because different children are different people. So I have to match my chinuch to that child. So one child is... The children will sometimes say, why do you do that with him? Why don't you do that with me? So sometimes a correct answer to that is, you want the glasses he's wearing? They won't match you. She's wearing a skirt and you're not wearing a skirt. She's a girl and you're a boy. You need different things. So sometimes he needs to stay up later and you don't need to stay up so late. And children can understand that. Meaning, sometimes children say, that's not fair. Why is that not fair? So one kid gets to go out with his cousins all day and be free from school. So that kid say, but what about me? So you say, wait a second. Didn't I just go with you last Friday? And when you had a party, didn't I go with you? And don't you go with me to this and that and other thing? So, I mean, no one says that's not fair, because when it's right for you, we do what's right for you. When it's right for them, we do what's right for them. So the chanoch lanar al pi darko is something that I think it's fair to tell the children. This is what they need. I could tell you it's frustrating. I had a brother that was a pack of energy. One of my younger siblings couldn't sit still. So I was still riding in the driveway, and I wasn't allowed to leave the driveway without permission. He was riding the whole community and flying across streets, and I remember coming to my mother more than once and saying, I don't get it. I don't have permission to leave the driveway without permission. And he's riding all over. And my mother said to me, you think I sleep at night? You think I don't sit there and say Pirkei Tehillim and I'm davening he should make it home safe, but I know that there's no way I can leave him at home or leave him with that limitation that you have. He can't handle it. It's frustrating to hear, but usually when a child sees that parents are fair and consistent and that he has things that the other one doesn't have, and it's a balancing act, it's as frustrating as it is. A child can understand that. Different children have different needs, older, younger. Okay. Chanoch lanar al pi darko. Now, that's fair. One of the mistakes parents sometimes make is that they want to copy the success of another parent. It doesn't work. You can't copy. You could learn a tool and think about how to apply it. But if I'm taking the child into account and I'm taking the situation into account, I can't copy someone else. One of the challenges that we have, every generation has, and we have it more than any other generation, is understanding the generation that the child is growing up in. Meaning our children are growing up in a different world than we grew up in. The challenges they're facing are different. In my day, the candy said, say no to drugs. Today, I don't think that's even an issue. When I speak about my children's chinuch, I'm walking out of an understanding that the school he's going to go in is going to have drugs, is going to have boys who are mishkav zaharniks, is going to have a danger of pedophiles. That's a given. I spoke to one of the top high schools in Yerushalayim, and I happened to have been there. I was in the bathroom, and what I smelled like drugs. You'll ask me, how do I know what drugs smell like? So one of the schools I was in, on Purim, the kids were doing drugs, so I learned what the smell of drugs is. I went to the principal and I said, you know, I was in the bathroom in your school, and this was the day and this was the time, and I'm pretty sure the smell I smelled was drugs. So the principal said to me, he said, I'd have to be stupid to assume I don't have drugs in my school. I know I'm considered the top school in Yerushalayim, but I know that we're working very hard to know if there is or isn't drugs here. But I also know that if the statistic says that such and such a percentage is doing drugs, I have to be stupid to think it's not happening. So part of what we have to understand is what's really going on. When I came to the yeshuv, so I asked, are there drugs here? So people, I didn't think I was going to believe what people told me, but I wanted to at least know what people think is going on here. So people said, no, there was once drugs here, now there isn't drugs here. There's drugs here. And that's that was validated last week, meaning I spoke last week to the authorities here, just to know exactly what the percentage and what's really going on here. And for your information, another big challenge that we have now is there's a lot of Chilul Shabbos going on in the schools, meaning today in Frum schools, kids are answering SMSs on Shabbos, and they're on the internet on Shabbos, and that's a given. So part of our job is, in Chinuch is to know what challenges we're facing. Just this month, a girl came with a question, what she's supposed to do. She's in what's considered, again, if not the top, one of the top high schools for the Dati Lumi world. And she knows girls in her class are sending SMSs on Shabbos. Not one, more than one. So part of our job in Chinuch is to know what's going on in our generation. And we're not doing our children any favor when we're walking around thinking, everything's good. No, there are real problems. And that means that we have to know which battles we want to fight. And the first battle we should want to fight is to get the child to understand that we're on the same side. Meaning, to my mind, that's the first point that has to be there in Chinuch. Child has to understand, I'm not your enemy. Even though I'm sometimes going to be tough and I'm sometimes going to be warm and I have different roles I have to play, my first job is that there has to be a certain constant in his mind that whatever I'm doing, I'm with him, I'm not against him. And that means that even when a parent has to sometimes be strict and sometimes punish, it pays to think how to get that message across. Sometimes I ask my kids, after I've said an answer that they're not happy with, I ask him, do you think my answer was fair? So it's not comfortable for a kid to say, yeah, your answer was fair. What's he going to say? But it is important for him to get that. And sometimes I'll tell him, I'd much rather tell you yes. I'd much rather let you do what you want. I love you, and I want to give you what you want. But I think it's not good for you. I think I shouldn't. And as your parent, my job is to tell you no when you don't want it. And then the kid will invariably say, but what about all the other kids whose parents tell them yes? So then I say, look, every parent has to bring up his kid the way he thinks is best for the child. I think this is what's best for you. I think we have to be careful, and kids do appreciate this, not to put down other parents. Meaning, I wouldn't tell him, if a parent loves his kid, then he shouldn't let him do it. And what can I say about them? I wouldn't do that. I would say, I do what I think is best for you, and they do what they think is best for their kid, and then, you're stuck with me. I'm your Abba. You were born to this house. You're going to have to live with what I think is best for you. Come on. Kids appreciate it when a parent is honest and fair. Meaning, if you're consistent and you're honest and you're fair, so, okay. That doesn't mean they'll always like what you have to say, but at the end of the day, they'll have an appreciation. Okay, I got a fair answer.
That maybe later on there's a risk that they're not understanding why you're doing what you're doing, they might just come to see you as being a more stricter parent without having specific value advantages over other parents, and therefore resent that they have such a strict ab, and therefore when they have the chance they will distance themselves from your authority.
So that's a balancing act, meaning I said the first point in Chinuch is the child has to understand we're on the same side. And at different ages, you give over that point differently. It depends on the age. There will be times when you have to tell a child, look, I don't agree with what they're doing, but I understand that you feel badly, so I'm going to make it up to you. Let's take an example. The youth movement in a yeshuv has a mixed event. And you feel you don't want your kid going to that event. So the kid says, my friends are going to go there. And you say, I understand that, but I don't want you there. I don't think that's where you should be spending your time. I think part of the responsibility of the parent is to say, but I'm going to make it up to you. I understand that you see that other kids are doing something that you would want to do. And you're right that you want to do it. It is fun, but I don't like the way it's being set up. Or I had situations where the school did something which I thought wasn't safe. Okay, so I'm not going to send him because I think it's not safe. But at the same time, I owe it to him to make it up to him. So that meant I took off a day from work. I took off a day to go on a trip with him because part of my responsibility in chinuch is like you're saying, I can't just be the meanie who says no. And sometimes I'll say, look, I can't do it on the same day, but I'm going to make it up to you. You're right. You're right that they're doing it and you're not, and you're right that you want it. And I'm telling you why I'm not going to agree, but I'm also going to find a way to give you something else that'll make up for it. And sometimes I think a parent should sit down, and I do it, and say, let's think together. What's a fair equivalent to make it up? And then the child sees, hey, again, I think in our door, one of the most important points, the Rebbe of Pius Eschner writes this 250 years ago, but I think today it's much more powerful. A child has to understand we're on the same side. And we also have to realize that the use of force is not going to work. The rule is a child is always more powerful than the parent. If you think you're stronger, you're not. It's only a matter of time. Because I have an audience right now, I can't explain more. But give me a second. Let's see if I could... I'll say it in terms that they won't understand. We've reached an age where the threats can escalate to the point where the child basically says, you'll do that, so observance will be put on the table. And it's very easy to reach that point. I think that there's a basic message that has to be made to a child, and again, it requires a certain sensitivity to know at which stage how to express it to a child, but a child has to realize that his religiosity is his own benefit. He's not doing me a favor. And that at different ages, that's expressed differently. So when our five-year-old got upset at me one Shabbos meal and threw his yarmulke at the table and said, I'm not benching. So I said, you're right, you're not benching. Go to bed and you're not benching. And when your neshama goes up to Shemayim, you're going to have to fend for yourself why you didn't bench tonight. But you're not benching, you're right. You will not bench now. Go to bed, but it's your issue. It's between you and the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's not my issue. I don't care. Goodbye, good night. You could imagine that 2 minutes later, the kid was at the table saying, I want a bench. But I told, you're not doing me a favor, and it's not a threat to me. It's your own benefit, it's your own interest, and it's to your own advantage. Again, that's a good answer for a five-year-old. At every age, you have to think how to get that message across. That's a balancing act. The Rebbe of Pius Eschner, in his whole long letter and introduction to his work, that's the point he works on. How do you get a child to realize that this is really his own interest? He's not doing me any favor. I'm doing him a favor because I'm willing to help him get there. But that's a challenge. In each generation, in each stage, in each child, it's a balancing act. One of the things we have to think about is how to share with them the beauty of leading a Jewish life. And that's something which a person has to do intelligently. For example... very often we appreciate things as we frame them. Let's take an example from a marriage. You have a husband and wife, and someone says to the husband, you know, you're so nice. Your wife is so annoying, and you put up with her so nicely. You're really a nice guy. Now, you could imagine that the guy's going to come home, and every time she's going to say something, he's going to think, oh, she is annoying. What happened? You framed something, so now you created it. You've created a monster, because if you frame it, once you've given it a name, so then everything that happens suddenly fits that. A woman calls up, I know a couple that got divorced over this. There was a woman who kept barraging her neighbor and telling her, you're so amazing, your husband doesn't do anything, and you run the whole house on your own, and he's that. And yet, theoretically, she was complimenting. But what she did was, she kept framing the husband as good for nothing, and it took 3 to 5 years, but at the end, she got fed up. You know, you are good for nothing. Eventually, if you frame something, so then everything ends up falling into that category. Well, the same way it could be used for the negative, it could be used for the positive. If we can frame things for a child, if you at the end of a Shabbos, you tell a child, let's think for a minute, what a beautiful Shabbos we had. We had a beautiful davening Friday night, and we got a beautiful meal together. It's important to show a child what's nice. Meaning, you can have a beautiful Bein Hazmanim, but if at the end of Chol HaMoed you told the kid he has to be on, in bed on time, so to his mind he lives the moment and that's it, the whole day was a goner and the whole week was a goner and you're the meanest parent in the world. But some parents will take a child and at the end of the day they'll tell a child, let's think, part of bedtime is, let's think, what nice things happened to us today? What good things happened today? So you train a child, you get a child accustomed to thinking of what was good and what was positive. So in general, that's a good thing to do because that's the greatest gift you could give a child, the capacity to appreciate what he has. You give him that, he has everything. You live a life where you're always complaining about things. The iriyah isn't right, and the motzah isn't right, and the mazkirut isn't right, and the rabbi isn't right, and the shul isn't right. And you keep telling him about everyone that's not right. The garbage men don't pick up on time, and they don't pick up often enough. And you keep showing him what's wrong in the world, so then he'll always see what's wrong, he'll always see what's missing, and then nothing's good. He'll never be happy. You keep showing him what's good, and you keep showing him appreciation, so he'll learn to be happy with what he does have. It's a question of perspective. It's not that one's right and one's wrong. It's a habit that a person can train himself. So some parents will sometimes sit with the child on a steady basis. Every night, the children know part of bedtime is that each child gets a chance to mention what things were fun and positive today. So to that child, he learns to appreciate things. Children reach a point where that's their favorite part of the day. And then you could look back at the day and see what was good about it. Very often, I try to take advantage of the walk home Friday night, Shabbos morning, to discuss with the kids what's about to happen. And you could stick in so many points as you do that. Ima went out and bought the chicken, and Ima cooked the chicken, and Ima cleaned the chicken, and Ima prepared the house. It helps the kid appreciate what Ima does, which usually doesn't happen. You can assume that to kids, a mother is a rag to be used and thrown when you're done with. Whatever you need, you come to her. But more than that, they don't. If the father's not going to tell the kids what to appreciate in the mother, they won't see it. Doesn't exist. She just, you know, it's a given. I have my left arm, I have my right arm. I don't wake up and say thank you that I have a left arm and a right arm. I don't think to say thank you that I have a mother. So that's a father's job. And vice versa. Meaning parents can show kids appreciation for the other parent, and they have to. But parents can also utilize that to show the kids appreciation, to see what's good. And it's very important to do that because a kid won't see it on his own. He will be very vocal. And it will be very real to him to see what's not good. I wanted another cup of soda and you didn't give it to me. Oh, everything that was bad. I'm not eating anything else. Wait a second, everything was good. So there's one thing you didn't like. But by then you've already missed it. Then you're already fighting an uphill battle. Whereas a person should try to work the other way. Let's look at what was good. You end each day and you tell a child, look at what we did. You end a trip and you tell the kids on the way back, let's think what was fun in that trip. So then the kids start having appreciation. You end the vacation, you tell them, look at all the fun things we did. It's not enough to take pictures. Take pictures and look at them with the kids. Don't just look at them on your own. You remember this? You remember how fun that was? And that, now, today we live in the digital world. You take a picture a second later, you could look back at that moment, right? On the way back from a trip, you could already be looking at the pictures of the trip. So that's important. And that's important not only in general, but also on the religious level. And here parents give messages that they don't even realize the kid is getting. There's a known story of a kid that was asked, what's more important, Shabbos or money? So the kid said, money, of course. So they asked him, what do you mean? So he said, well, if I turn on a light, so my parents say, you shouldn't do that on Shabbos. But if I dare break a vase or work next to Abba's equipment, oh, they get so upset. So what's more important? We give messages to the kids where we don't even realize it. And we have to try and think about it and then use that to our advantage, not to our disadvantage. Again, chinuch is the type of thing where you're never going to cover everything. My father has a saying, it wasn't fun to hear it as a child, but I think there's truth to it. We are all our parents' survivors. At the end of the day, no parent is perfect, and every child will have a list of grievances. My parents should have done that, and they weren't fair about that. Fine, but we should try and give them the tools to be healthy, productive adults. And part of it is an appreciation for life and appreciation for religious life specifically. There's a rule in chinuch one of the few rules, but again, like every rule, it needs balance, but the rule is, don't say no when you can say yes. And that requires a certain amount of thought. Meaning, as a parent, we think right away, what's right, what's wrong? Okay, no. Stop. Could you have said yes? And in all the things we're discussing in Chinuch, one of the hardest things to change is a habit. So it's very hard to grow in Chinuch. I like a system which I think helps in every midah, every time a person tries to develop a midah, I like taking a set time where a person works on it. And a person should try to start either with the time that makes the most sense or with the time that's easiest to implement that midah. So let's take not yelling at kids. A parent could say, I'm not going to yell at them at bedtime. That might make the most sense. That might not be the easiest. But a parent can think to himself and say, I want the kid to end on a good note. So let me try to see how I could do bedtime without yelling. And very often what happens if we make ourselves that goal, we take a half hour where we say, I'm going to that half hour, I'm not going to yell. So then you suddenly realize you have other tools at your disposal, which in the past you wouldn't have even considered using because, you know, I'm used to yelling, I'm used to doing whatever habit I'm in. And I have another example. Let's say on Shabbos, I think that people should try to minimize the comments they make at a Shabbos table. Meaning, you want the Shabbos table to be fun for the kid. You want the singing. You don't want it to be a chinuch situation. So he's pulling at her hair, and she's pouring her grape juice on his head, and he's taking mishdeh ready to shove it down her dress. You understand that, okay, now what are you going to do? So the first instinct is to jump and say, are you guys out of your mind? What are you doing? But stop. If you decided for yourself, I'm not going to yell now. I'm going to try to have everything I say with a smile. That's another good challenge parent to try. Try to take 15 minutes where everything you say is with a smile. You'll suddenly find yourself talking differently. We did this in the marriage class. I gave guys a challenge. I said, try taking a half hour of the day that you walk around with a stupid smile on your face. Just smile. I said, you know what? Let's do it for the rest of class. Half hour where everyone's just smiles. And what they discovered, there's a book. Shane, do you remember what the name of the book is? Is it called Snap?
Blink.
Thank you. There's a book called Blink. I don't know if it's worth reading. My brother gave it to me. I read it. You know what I'm talking about? The book discusses all kinds of research that they did. One point that he brings up is that they were researching the different face muscles that we use when we react. He discusses their intuition. His whole point in the book is different research that was done to compare our intuition with our logic and trying to analyze when one should use intuition and when one should use logic. So he brings all kinds of interesting research. But one of the things he brings is that they did research on the different muscles we have in the face and how we use them to express different things. So they spent hours, these are two Harvard professors, spending hours making faces at one another. So they discovered that after they would spend a week making angry faces at one another, they were angry. And when they'd spent the weeks that they'd spend making happy faces at one another, they were happy. So they started researching, this wasn't what they were planning on researching, but they started discovering that the expression that we have on our face actually affects how we feel inside. We think it's the other way. We think our face is expressing what's inside. No, our face can really change what's inside. So I gave them a challenge, and everyone came back and said it worked. I said, try a half hour that you walk around with a stupid smile on your face. You don't mean it, right? You'll see you'll be a different person at the end of the half hour. Everyone agreed. Suddenly they were calmer. They were just happier. It's not fun to walk around with a stupid smile on your face. You feel stupid, but it works. And the same thing with the child. If I talk to a child and I could keep smiling and talk calmly, so I'm going to affect myself. There's a mistaken approach that people think, let me let my anger out, I'll yell. It works the other way. When I yell, I get more angry. When I reply calmly, I get more calm. if I can have self-control and speak calmly and smile, so then the child gets a different message and I'm a different person. Sometimes you have to yell. Sometimes you have to get angry. The child tries to stick, I don't want to say it. The child runs into the street. So you have to yell. There has to be a sharp reaction. You're not going to react, but you're not doing the child any favor. But most of the times that a parent yells, it's not because he had to yell, it's because that was the easiest reaction. That was the most natural reaction. Well, chinuch involves trying to work on having the best reaction that's there for a child. We're all human. We're all going to yell when we shouldn't have yelled, and that's not going to kill the kid. He has human parents. But if we're trying to move forward, so these are points that every person can see in his own life. What's the greatest investment you can make in chinuch? Shalom bayis. There's no investment that compares with peace between the parents. Everything else pales. The first class I gave to kids, maybe not the first, but one of the first, was a youth group. And at the end of the first group, I was all 15, we were supposed to continue a story from week to week to week. I always left them in suspense. At the end of the first session, so a kid comes over to me and says, "I'm sorry, I won't be here next week. I won't know the continuation of the story." So I said, "Okay." So he says, "No, you understand, I'm divorced." So I'm looking at this 7-year-old kid, and he's telling me, "I'm divorced." So I said, "What?" So he says, "Oh, no, my parents are divorced." Didn't stand the slip. In his mind, he was divorced. It's his parents. Yeah, but that's not what the kid lives. So the greatest investment we can really make in the chinuch of our children, step one, is to invest in our relationship with our spouse. Before we continue. In 10 minutes we have to end. One of the things that don't change, it's very interesting psychologically, but in a child's mind, it's very hard to conceptualize that a parent is wrong. So Abba's always right, Nima's always right, but what happens when Abba and Nima contradict? It's rare that there's an issue that's worth the price of disagreement, of dissent between the parents. It's very, very rare that you're going to have something that's really legitimate to contradict your spouse on. And if you think about it, it's a habit a person has to get into, and a person has to appreciate that this is so. You're hurting the child much more. So you think he should be in bed at 7. And you told your wife that already 15,000 times. But she told him he could stay up till 8. Now you're going to come and contradict her. What's going to happen if the child stays up till 8? No, they'll be tired tomorrow in school. Let's say all your reasoning is right. At the end of the day, the harm you do if you belittle what the other parent says or contradict what the other parent says in an overt way by far outweighs any benefit that could be gained by getting your way. And I'm not saying that spouses won't disagree. They will disagree, and they have to try and work out what mahalach they're going to take. But they have to back one another. And even if it means backing something which I don't agree in. Okay, Vima said that, fine, so you're up till 8. It could be that you then go and talk to your spouse and then you decide that, no, she'll change her mind and say, you know, I'm sorry, I said 8, but I changed my mind. You're going to go to sleep at 7. Fine, whatever. But not to contradict and not to belittle. Quite the contrary. The Gemara has a term called gomlim, where each one supports the other one. And that's part of our responsibility. And that helps a kid be stable. Chazal tell us a rule. With regard to a child, the Gemara says a rule, Smol docha v'min mekarevet. The left hand, the weaker hand, is the one that pushes away, if you'll call it that, that has to rebuke when necessary, and the right hand has to bring close. So let me ask you, how expressive is a person when they say, I love you? And how expressive is a person when they say, I can't believe you did that? If you notice, with children it's easier to get it right. with everyone else, with our spouses or anyone else, the greatest example is a chavrusa. You learn with a chavrusa and you disagree with him. Notice how loudly you yell, "I don't agree with you." And notice how softly you say, "You're right." And same thing with spouses. It's the same thing. Why? It's ego, but it shouldn't be there. We have to remember, Chazal said, be much more forceful in bringing the child close. A parent has to get into the habit of telling a kid, "I enjoyed spending the time with you. I enjoyed learning with you. I enjoyed the meal with you. I enjoyed the time we went riding together." Give him positive feedback. Yeah, the kid will make a face at you. I guarantee it. As he gets older, the faces will get worse. And, "Oh, Ima, you're so mushy." But he needs to hear it. He needs to hear, "I love you." He needs to be hugged. He needs to be kissed. He needs to be held. He needs to be played with. A child needs it. And when I was teaching an 8th grade class, so part of my dark history, I was a magician as a kid. Then I learned the halachos there. You're not supposed to do magic. But before I learned those halachos, I did a lot of magic. So I studied, one of the things I studied was crowd control. How do you control kids? So one of the rules they said, I know you won't take, right? So take and pass it on, okay? One of the rules they taught over there was that when a child's getting all rowdy, if you don't say a word, but as you continue, in that case it was a show, but the same thing is true for a class, if you don't say a word, you just put your hand on that kid's shoulder, then the kid feels the attention, and children need a certain amount of physical contact, and the child will calm down. So I'm giving a test in 8th grade, and kids are starting to make shtuyot. Okay, so I walk over to the kid who's most problematic, and I put my hand on his shoulder. I didn't say one word of reprimand, and I look at his test. Child's quiet. Next kid's making noise, I do the same thing. Third kid didn't make any problems, good kid, calls me over and says he has a question on his paper. So, to my mind, he doesn't need me to put his hand on his shoulder. He's quiet, right? So I lean over to look at his test. He takes my hand and puts it on his shoulder. Literally. Children need it. And the physical touch, the contact, when you hug a kid, when you kiss a kid, he needs it. He might run away. And he might say, you know, he still needs it. And a parent has to know to give it. It's very healthy for a kid to be sitting on a parent's lap during the Zmiros on Shabbos. Children need it. It's very healthy when you come home to pick up the kids and hug the kids. And again, each age and its needs. You pick up a kid when he's 15 years old, he's not going to like you for it. And he's legitimate. But that doesn't mean he doesn't need a hug and a kiss also, and a pat on the back, and an arm on the shoulder. We have to find the right opportunities, but children need it. Americans specifically have a warped perspective on this. There's a certain phobia from men touching men, and that's gotten to a point where people have a hard time being natural and normal with one another. But it's important. Children need it from a father and from a mother. Within normal ranges, they need it. And it's part of the attention they get, and it's part of what gives them confidence and comfort in the home. I say this to couples, but the same thing is true with children. You walk by and you want to look at something he does, and you don't put an arm on his shoulder and look, you missed an opportunity. That physical contact to him means a lot. If you just look and there's this cold distance and there's no contact, the child needs it. And when you give it to him, he won't need it. So that's something which a person has to think about. I say it when I teach chassan classes. I say, if you're sitting at the table and the couple is mutter and you're sitting this far from your wife, what's wrong with you? Yeah. With couples, I say it's a mitzvah. You make your spouse happy. But with children, it's also a mitzvah. Just because there are children doesn't mean that when we do positive things to them, it's not a mitzvah. They need it too. One of the difficult things that a parent should ask himself is, how many positive words did my child hear today? I think the ratio has to be 15 to 1. 15 positive for every word of reprimand or every tough word. And most parents don't get anywhere near that. And that's not right. We spend our parenthood saying, don't do that, and you shouldn't have done that, and could you stop doing that? Wait a second. What's going on here? What's the child hearing? How many times do I say, thank you for remembering to close the door, if that was an issue once? And thank you for eating so nicely. And kol hakavod, you helped your sister so beautifully, and you cleaned up your room. We're very good at saying when they didn't do, but we have to find opportunities to say what they did, and be positive, and limit our comments. Meaning, we couldn't live with the amount of comments that our children hear either. I think about it. They're also human beings, you know. I don't remember who it was, put up a sign that said, children are people too. You know, they are. So that's one of the challenges that every parent has, and it's something we all have to work on. It's important to show love in ways that are not responsive, meaning we know that for special occasions and for as a reaction to special things, you do special things. You'll buy a gift, you'll say a good word. And sometimes it's important to give him the cookie without him asking, to get him a gift for no reason other than, I love you, come on. It's not because of something. We're very good at doing things because of. It's not right. There have to be times where the answer is yes. You walk down the aisle in the supermarket. How many times does the kid ask you to get that cereal or that chocolate? And you say no. You have a million reasons to say no. You should also find the times where you say yes. Enjoy it. Let's get it. And you'll have, not because it's Chol HaMoed or Rosh Chodesh or you did something extraordinary. No. Just because it's important to also say yes. It's important to say no, but it's also important to say yes and to find opportunities to say yes which are not reactive. They're not responsive to something. Just because why not? Sometimes the kid should also have a treat. And I gave the example of food, but obviously this applies to many other things. And it's up to the parent to find it. Yes, it's good to have a special treat in honor of Shabbos and in honor of Yom Tov and for whatever other reason. But it's also good that it's a standalone. So we're soon going to be out of time. I was contemplating whether we should begin with issues that you want us to discuss. We have 5 minutes left. So is there anything that you want us to discuss?
I just think it would be good to summarize.
I also thought to summarize. That was going to be... Yeah. So, okay. Shackle. Everything shackle. Yeah. So you're covered. I would just end with one point before we summarize. Maybe 2 points. One mistake that parents make that a person should never make is... a parent should never make love conditional, meaning get a good grade so Abba will love you. No. What you're doing when you do that is you're encouraging the kid to get a bad grade. Because deep down inside, the kid says, can't be that he'll only love me if I get a good grade. I'll get a bad grade and I'll see that he still loves me. Meaning when the love becomes conditional, then the child is driven to do the exact opposite. He won't know how to verbalize it, but deep down inside, he is driven to go the opposite direction because he needs to prove to himself that the love is really unconditional. So that's one mistake that's very common, and a person shouldn't make it. And the other thing is that when it comes to religion, so Chazal taught us, Chazal, we're speaking about a relationship between a husband and a wife, but Chazal said it about a home in general, that pressure destroys and doesn't build. That Chazal said when a person applies religious pressure in a home, so then that is counterproductive. It will produce a facade, it will not produce a real result, and it will produce a facade which is untrue and will ultimately self-destruct. Chazal said if a woman is under pressure that the candles have to be lit, and there's pressure instead of love, so then even if it's after Shkia, she will sense that pressure much more than the Shabbos, and she'll end up lighting candles. When Shabbos, that was an example, Chazal said. Chazal said, if his children know that Abba has to have meat at the Shabbos table, and when they go to the store, the kosher meat isn't there, So then the pressure will get them to buy non-kosher meat. That's how far the Gemara took it. And so the Gemara gave it as a rule, that when it comes to religion, pressure is counterproductive. It produces the opposite result. So, okay, what did we discuss today? We said that there's no magic solution to anything. All we can discuss are different tools and perspectives, and every person has to decide what's right for him, what's wrong for him, what's right in which scenario. There is no one solution that works all the time. There is no one solution that works for every child. That's up to the parent to decide which tools to use and when to use it. We said that no two children are going to need the same thing. Chanoch lanar al pi darko means that each child has his path, and a parent has to learn what works for each child. We said that it's good to go to a chinuch shir or read a chinuch book, primarily for two reasons. One, because it gets us thinking, and we don't have to agree with everything that's said, but the fact that we've opened our minds and we've started thinking about it, so that's good. You don't agree, that's also good, but at least we think. And secondly, we said, because hopefully we gain tools which we'll think about when to apply. We said that part of understanding what we need in chinuch is understanding our generation and the challenges that children face. I don't remember who it was. One of the Rashi Yeshiva who just passed away said that a child today sees more pritzus from his house to the stand to buy a bag of milk than his grandfather saw his whole life in Europe. And in a short walk, a child sees they're facing challenges that we never faced. And the challenge of the internet, the challenge of the iPhone, the challenges that they're facing are phenomenal. So we have part of understanding how to help a child and work with a child is being a part of his life. A parent who doesn't play ball and does not know what the kid is enjoying, does not live with him in his generation, getting into the sandbox, so to speak, getting dirty with him, can't educate him. If I'm in a different world, if I'm not living his world, so then we're not talking the same language. I don't have to laugh at all his silly jokes. Sometimes yes and sometimes no. I'm still the parent. I'm not his friend. But at the end of the day, I have to understand what he's contending with, and he has to feel like I understand him. Not that I'm in a different world, and I don't even know what he's talking about. We said a good rule is that very often you don't say no when you could say yes. Obviously, there are times when you have to say no, and it's important that a child knows that there is a no. But it's also important that we don't overuse that. On the contrary, when possible, we say yes. We said one of the greatest investments we could make in chinuch is shalom bayis, the relationship between the spouses. And it's rare that there's something that's worth contradicting a spouse or putting down a spouse. It's almost non-existent. Probably non-existent, that you'll ever get something positive out of that. We said the rule that Chazal says, "Smol docha v'imin mekarevet," that any rebuke has to be with the weaker hand, and the right hand has to be used to bring close, and a person should try and gauge himself how many positive words they say, how many positive words does a child hear. We said one of the tools for working on chinuch is to try and partition time when I work on a specific thing. It could be a half hour during the day. We could try to take the easiest time to do it or the most practical time to do it. Meaning sometimes it's best for a kid that the last 10 minutes before he leaves for the day, he won't get yelled at. So a person can say, okay, those 10 minutes, he's not going to get yelled at. He has to live his whole day with whatever he ended the morning with. So that's up to a person to decide. But a person has to gauge how many hugs, how many kisses, how many positive words, how potent, how forceful, how much emotion goes into the positive that I say and how much goes into the negative that I say. It's important that the child sometimes receives, and it's not contingent on anything, that it's not a constant reward system. I happen to be against rewards. I think that it's way, way, way overused in our generation. When I started teaching, I took a class that no one else was willing to take. I was young, you know, so I wanted the challenge. They were at a point where no Rebbe wanted to take that class. I said, I'm taking them on one condition, that you back me whatever I do. So one of the things I did with the class was, it's a long story, but one of the things was I told them, I'm taking them to Tomchei Shabbos. In the U.S., you guys are probably familiar where people volunteer on Thursday nights. They put together food packages for families that don't have. So the first thing that the kids asked me is, they knew that when you collect tzedakah, you get a reward. And I said, no, 0 reward. And no one has to come. It's after school time, on your time. Whoever wants to can come. One time, I'll take whoever wants and you'll volunteer and you'll know that you help poor families have food for Shabbos. Only those who want to can come. And no one has to come and it won't affect your grade and nothing. It's a extracurricular, out of school, no reward, zero. You'll have to nap in the afternoon, you'll have to get ready, you'll have to do more work, you'll have to come to school the next morning even though you're up late at night. Zero reward. It's just because you're helping another human being. Not only did the kids come, they begged to go again and again and again. Children can connect with something that's good, and sometimes by rewarding them, we take away from it. Sometimes a child has to hear, what are you getting a reward for? He has to hear that answer. What do you mean? This is a mitzvah. This is what's right. This is what's good. Do it because it's a good thing to do. What, you need a reward? What's a reward? What am I rewarding you for? I don't know which watch is right. Oh, this watch is right. Okay. So I'll tell you a story. I once sent the kids up to the corner. I meet them at the corner to take them to Gan. So from our house to the corner, there are four houses. It's all sidewalk. To get them to go quicker, I sometimes say, we'll have a race. We'll see who gets them first, me or you. Fine, seems safe, right? I come up the steps, and I see that there's a car that's been parked on the sidewalk, and he's starting to drive towards where the kids are. And I didn't have a chance to yell, but I saw the kids take three steps back and wait for the car to pass. So I was so excited, you know. Here, they knew there was a race. They were in such a rush to get to the corner because they wanted to beat me to the corner. And yet when they saw a car moving, they remembered that we had told them that if they see a car moving, they take steps back and they don't pass so long as the car is there. So I ran up, I hugged them, and I said, that was amazing, and I complimented them, and I said, I'm going to give them, I don't remember what sweet, when we get home at the end of the day that day. I came home and my wife told me that was a mistake. So I said, why? So she said, because to them it was a given. By rewarding it, you made it something beyond. Like it's deserves a reward. You see, in their minds it was a given that if there's a car there, it's not safe, they don't move. She was right, my mistake. Sometimes by rewarding we diminish something. It should be a given to the child. It's in his interest. It's his safety. I hurt their chinuch by telling them I'm going to reward what they did because in their minds it was so obvious. So our generation is making a little bit of a mistake by rewarding everything a child does. Because then a child forgets, it's my responsibility, this is what I have to do. And the example of it is what I did with those kids. There were kids that were really, really problematic. Kids in foster homes, I mean, really problematic kids. But they could connect with the idea that they're doing it because it's right. We said part of getting good habits in chinuch is to take time to gauge what we're doing, which is part of the advantage of having a class or a book that a person learns, because then a person takes time and thinks about where he's headed and can analyze and perfect things. We said that love should be unconditional and that pressure in religious things is destructive. We also said that if you're ever going to enter a fight, you have to realize that in the long run, the children are more powerful than the parents. So we have to work, on the one hand, we don't have to give in on everything. We do have to do chinuch, and we do have to educate and guide, and I'm not saying we have to give in. But we have to try and use force as a last resort. Meaning the idea, we have to try to get to a point where, at least as a child grows and matures, it's less and less the idea that because I said so. Meaning there's a limit to how far that's going to work because at some point the kid is going to be, no. And he's going to have the upper hand. So yes, that's a tool when he's 5 and 7 and 9. But when he gets to 15 and 17 and 20, I have to be at a point where he understands it. Maybe we'll end with one quick story. When we were dating, my wife asked me, what would I answer if a child said they wanted to get an earring, a boy? So I said there would be a few things. Number one, I'd say let's go together and choose a good place, a place that's safe and a place that's responsible and a place that they don't have diseases and they have a license. And then obviously I'd come to my wife and start discussing with her where do we go wrong and how do we get him out of this. But I'd be with him because there comes a stage in the chinuch where you can't go against him. At that point, you have to ask yourself, how did he get there? And how am I going to help him to get out of it? But me as a parent, at that point, I could discuss with him why he should reconsider, what there is to gauge about that, what are the advantages or disadvantages. But at the end of the day, at that point, I already have to work with him. And I had the same argument with a few parents, that their kids want to stop keeping Shabbos and other things. When a child reaches a certain point, that's it. Whatever I've invested until now, he's going to have his b'chira chofshit. He's his own boss. I can work with him. I can think with him. I could love him and explain to him and think with him why I've made certain choices. And sometimes I have to use external tools. I have a Rosh Yeshiva now who I'm in discussion with. Brilliant mechanech. But when it comes to his own son, he doesn't know what to do. In all of chinuch, I would consult with him. But with his own son, one of the things I told him is, you as a parent is not the person he wants to hear now. You have to get external forces to talk to your kid. You have to find the friends, the people in the neighborhood, the people in the community, the people who he's close to, let them talk to him. You find the way to hire someone who will hire him. You pay the money, you pay the salary in the, behind the scenes, but let him go and work and get him good contacts. And as a parent, we have to realize, as the child matures, my force as a forceful parent diminishes. He's stronger than I am. He wins. And he has his own b'chira chofshit. At the end of the day, we try to bring him to a point where they'll make the right decisions. We don't have control. Child has their choice. And I shouldn't try to control that either. When he's 7 and 9, I do help him and control that. When he's 15 and 19, I have to realize what my limitations are. I have to work with him that he should understand. And again, that's the point we began with. That our main job today in chinuch, our basic, our first step, is to work on getting the child to understand that we're on the same side. Now, obviously, we just started, but we'll see.